Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we're talking about The Never-Ending Story. Yes, the classic traumatizing movie about watching a childhood pet die. This is an old Patreon episode that we're dusting off to, you know, keep things fresh and introduce some new ideas and materials. Thanks for all you do to keep us on the charts. Thanks for sharing and thanks for, you know, sticking with us throughout this year and this season. Bye everyone.
Hey Patreon subscribers, this is Vic here. Welcome to a Myopia Movies, like Patreon exclusive. You guys have been asking for this for a long time, so please enjoy The Never Ending Story. Oh yeah, that horse dies. Oh yeah, it's tragic. Of the weird post, let's say, I guess it's Return of the Jedi, that's the most fantasy-ish of those movies. This is the one that is kind of the best? I don't know. We've talked about a lot of them. Dark Crystal included, Black Cauldron. We've talked about Labyrinth. We've talked about so many of these kind of weird fantasy, bizarre movies. If you've listened to the Cineprov Patreon, we also did Legend. But here we talk about probably the most tragic. Anyway, so the hard version of the Pagemaster, the more kid-oriented version of the Princess Bride, whatever you prefer. Enjoy our coverage of the Never-Ending Stories, and thanks for being Patreon people. And if you're hearing just the preview, consider donating so you get the whole thing. Thanks, guys.
This week, we round out our Muppet movies by doing The Never-Ending Story, the last fantasy nonsense that Jim Henson ever did. Until we do, I guess, Return of the Jedi. I'm host Nick Hoffender, Front Cineprov, host of Required Reading and Myopia, and on panel we have
Charlie Rose.
And Kelly.
So we're doing The Never-Ending Story. This is another one that has been on the docket since we came up with this show. Mm-hmm. It's streaming on Netflix, so if you haven't seen it somehow, hit stop now and watch it before it leaves Netflix forever.
And if you have seen it, trigger warning that the
horse still dies.
Still that Netflix chose is where Artax is in the Swamp of Sadness. So Jonathan had it queued up when I got home last night so that we could watch it from picking up Adelaide and coming home. And I didn't know what the front screen was. So when the movie ended and it went back out to the Netflix screen, I was like, why the fuck would they pick that scene? And he's like,
Netflix is trolling.
Yeah. He looked at me and he's like, that's what you're upset about? And I was like, well, I was upset about it when it happened too. Like, this is not different.
Yeah, I mean, we should talk about this, because this is, I think, the second movie by this director. This is Wolfgang Peterson, the director of Air Force One. Das Boot, excellent movie, and oddly prescient movie, which I riffed on Cineprov, Outbreak from 1995. Yeah, Kelly, this is a movie that traumatized you, so can you give us a plot?
No, I loved this movie growing up. I absolutely adored this movie growing up. All of the other ones that were similar to it traumatized me because I didn't see them until I was older. This movie is really wonderful in its weirdness. So we open with the Never-Ending Story theme song. All the credits are at the beginning. Right? I missed that. I don't miss that at all. So we open with Bastion. He is a young boy. He's living with his dad. From context clues, his mother must have just passed away. He's struggling in school, so they have kind of a chat, like, I need you to be more serious, stop drawing pictures in math class.
Whoa. Right? We need to talk about the scene for now.
Let's back it up, because Major Dad.
Do we want to do the
It's Major
plot?
Dad, and how does he do breakfast? But taking three
in
eggs into a blender and just
with
drinking
orange
it.
Juice.
With orange juice. And I was like,
I was expecting to put that in coffee in there too.
No. The Sanka? The Sanka? Holy shit.
I looked at Jonathan and I was like, he put an egg in the blender. Jonathan's like, it's the 80s. They thought that was healthy.
I know. Well, that's the thing. In the 80s, like, all these, like, aggressive power business guys and or bodybuilders.
I was going to say, he has to go fight Apollo Creed at the end of this.
I mean, you know.
No.
They would do that every single movie. It was like a trope.
That was something. I was just like, and he's like, Dad, they beat me up at school today. And he's like, well, I have 3 eggs to get through breakfast. And you're just like,
stop drawing unicorns in your mouth.
It's the equivalent of rub some dirt on it and walk it off type of a thing.
Well, and he thinks the kid is drawing, like,
horses.
Velvet painting, like, black, like, poster horses. And he's like, yeah. They were unicorns. And you're like,
his
great.
Dad's like, his
you're
dad's
not
like,
making it better.
Yeah, no, well, his dad goes, what? Like, wasn't even listening to him.
Yeah.
Well, because he's having a heart attack because he just drank 3 raw eggs.
And orange juice.
Orange juice.
Happily. Happily. He finished it. And I'm like, oh, you guys, the fucking product placement on this table, though.
What?
The giant Ziploc box of Ziploc bags. The Wonder Bread. And then just a plate of butter. That was breakfast.
Well, also.
Bastion didn't even have a drink.
No, he had nothing.
Not even toast. He had bread. And what was clearly still cold butter, even though it had been sitting on the table. Because that bread fell apart while this kid's trying to act and put butter on a piece of bread at the same time.
Also, this is, I guess, secretly a Disney movie because the mom is fucking dead. Because, like, the dad is trying to choke down 3, like, three eggs in an OJ.
It's always a dad with a daughter that's the Disney model.
Right, fair. Yeah. But he's like, you haven't been the same since your mom died. I'm like, this is a spicy dish for breakfast.
Right, exactly.
Well, he goes, I had another dream about mom. And his dad goes, I understand, but we need to have a chat. And it's like, you pick now? Can you do that later? And then he just leaves. Don't be late for school. And Bachelor's like, well, I wasn't late yesterday. Like,
I mean,
this is such a kid reasoning, well, too, though. Because, like, my daughter does that shit.
Is, like, trying to destroy everything that is good and hopeful and creative,
yes,
and sensitive about his son.
I was watching this. I was watching this yesterday over hot wings and dinner, and I'm like, the mom's been dead for like 4 days, right? Like, the dad's just like, I've moved on. I have a secretary, and like, the kid is just.
It just doesn't seem like it's been a long time.
No, it's been like 20
still
minutes.
Struggling, yeah. Like, and the dad just doesn't care that he's struggling.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, when you think about it, you know, a dad in the 80s. Grew up in the 50s.
He voted for Reagan twice already.
Exactly. So these people have their souls dead. I mean, this is a boomer, right?
This is the morning after the funeral, and he hasn't moved on yet.
This is a boomer. They grew up having to crawl under their desks to duck and cover from the nuclear bombs. So yes, he is an autumn person. He's the dream killer. Because this is another trope from the 80s.
Right, yeah.
The parent that likes to squash their children's dreams.
Yes.
I mean, and we're not even 20 seconds away from Truffle Shuffle kid beating the shit out of this kid. But, like, this is the last time we see this dad in this very traumatic movie.
That's
we don't see it. We don't see it. So, after our very, very understanding and heartfelt conversation with Dad.
Major Dad ticks off.
Yeah.
And
Bastion, he has to go harass Michael J. Fox on another movie.
Bastion starts walking. You know, he goes on his way to school. He runs into the bullies.
With the briefcase, by the way, that kid's a loser.
Yeah.
Bless his heart.
You know, throw him in the dumpster. So anyways, he gets out of the dumpster. He ducks into a bookshop where
a pedophile works.
Owner is
a toucher,
like, oh,
a
your
kid toucher.
Your books are safe. This book isn't safe, right? He steals it. He goes to school. He reads it. He gets immersed in it. And shenanigans ensue, right? He follows the story, but he also becomes a part of it. And that's pretty much the gist of the plot.
That's the movie.
Yeah, that's the movie. It's very creative, though. I like it.
Well, this was just my plot synopsis.
Yes.
But now, what the fuck was in that dumpster? It was like dust and straw.
Oh,
well,
no.
You know, that's like 80s
that
dumpsters.
Like,
80s behind dumpsters, the circus.
80s dumpsters were clean.
Were they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Plus, this also took place in Seattle.
Another Seattle movie.
Where was
two Seattle movies back to back.
Well, okay. I don't know where it was supposed to take place. I know it was filmed because there was one shot where you saw the needle clearly in the background.
100%. Yes. It was either Seattle or Toronto.
Okay. But
one of various space needles.
Yeah, that's true. Kelly, how old were you when you first saw this? And what was your memory of it?
Oh my gosh. This movie came out the year before I was born.
So, right in the heart.
You came out in 87, right?
No, 84.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie came out 4 years before I was born.
In the heart.
And I think the first time I saw it was on TV. I think I watched it with my parents. I don't remember what my first reaction was to it, though. I feel like if we were in Indiana, we were in the living room, the carpet is blue, we had already painted the walls white, and I was sad the horse died. I do remember that. And I remember thinking that I wanted to be the childlike princess because she had the little tiara on her head.
I am shocked the horse died so early. Because
I thought it was
for
later.
Me, it had so much emotional impact. And this is a movie, I mean, I'm not Charlie old. I'm older than you.
Yeah.
No, it came out the year before I was born.
You get a knife in the back.
I know I do.
I love you.
But I mean, I saw this a bunch when I was young because it was everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, and I mean, it's funny enough, like, even when I was in college, it might be the most referenced thing on things like Robot Chicken. And, like, it's a cultural touchstone. It's a weird fucking movie, especially since we've done things like The Pagemaster, which it's essentially the same as, but the kid gets sucked into the book, and it has the same framing narrative as your favorite movie of all time, The Princess Bride. But it's just, I like it. It's very cute, it's very tight, it's very concise. We have to talk about a lot of stuff in this.
Oh yeah, for sure. I have to say, as a kid, and I probably was close to what Bastion's age was supposed to be the first time I saw it, like elementary school.
Yeah.
Or that I remember watching it the first time. And I love reading. I've always loved reading. I don't remember, like, interjecting while I read my books. Like, gasping out loud and talking to myself. And
so,
like,
a lot of the characters heard you?
Yes! And I know that that's part of the story, but it's like, I was like, this kid is fucking annoying. No wonder he keeps getting beat up every time he reads. He talks to himself. Like, geez.
He was precocious.
Ugh. He was obnoxious. Also, the school has an attic? Did your school have an attic?
Dude, this is
that.
Like,
well, okay, okay, so.
Did your school have an attic? Mine did.
Mine did. Mine had an attic. But it was not accessible via a key that was in a box that had broken glass that you could reach in and cut yourself with.
Mine didn't have a key. Mine was, so ours was, like,
this
above
kid died,
the,
right?
What?
Like, no, this is, like, some sort of death fantasy. He's in the attic. Like, this is Jacob's ladder nonsense.
He died in the storm that very easily opened the glass windows in the attic of the school.
Well, you
they
mean
somehow
where
the, had papers on
where
the
rafter. CGI came in at the end and then a dragon beat up the bullies? I think the bullies killed him in the dumpster, and then the whole rest is like some sort of death rattle fantasy. Like, because the rest of this movie is... Also, did you know that they were played by different actors?
What?
Atreyu and Bastien are different actors?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you not know that?
Know that?
I thought they were supposed to be the same kid.
No.
Well...
They look the same.
They
look so goddamn...
They're supposed to be... I mean, well... You know, every story has an entry point. Okay? Mm-hmm. And Atreyu was entry point, literally.
Yeah.
I mean, straight up. Now, I did not go see this in the theaters. But I really wanted to. I really wanted to see it.
You were old enough to be able to see it.
I know.
No, I'm not
going to
do that to you.
I did see it. I did see the foul...
Did you go to see it because half of Simon and Simon were in there?
No, but I remember going to see Daryl because Daryl had this kid in it, Bastion, and I was like, oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
The only Daryl I know is the one in Walking Dead.
Oh, Daryl's one of the bullies.
No. Daryl's the movie that came out like 2 years later. Where the kid is a robot and looks like, you know, he's running away from... I hate you for not having my childhood.
I've never seen it, I'm sorry.
It's a great movie. It's sort of like Fly the Navigator. Navigator was good.
Also never seen it.
Fly the Navigator, previous episode from 30 years ago when the podcast started. This is the 8th season, so well done on us.
Yeah.
Have we
all been friends on them?
Well, I mean,
I think
the 8th season.
I think I've known you guys 10 years.
Probably.
I know.
I'm 36. You were 16 at the time.
Yeah. I like this math. Gonna go with this math.
So but. When we first, so like you mentioned, the kid, after going into this pedophile's bookstore, they're just,
oh, his name is Coriander, by the way.
He's terrifying. He gets really in this kid's face. He's like, so.
Well, he didn't leave. He says, get out. I don't like kids. And so Bastion walks further in. Like, you suck at following directions.
And by the way, I would love a bookstore like this, just to go in.
Messy as fuck everywhere.
Old, messy, smells. Yeah. Clearly, I could smell the books by watching.
Yeah, I sneeze. There's so much dust.
Yeah, it's great.
The basement of the Strand in New York, where you're just wandering around. There's weird corners and just, anyway. And the guy goes, you don't read books. You're playing your video games with your bleeps and bloops and your Mario Brothers. And he's like, no, I've read Robinson Crusoe. Yeah, the classic illustrated edition, you prick. And then he just mentions, like, but when you read Nemo, are you Captain Nemo? Because you can close the fucking book. Do you want to do some PCP in the back? We're gonna go on a vision quest, kid! And he starts licking the books.
Your books are safe. This book is not safe. And I'm like, what book is not safe?
And then, of course, he walks off, leaves the book, and then Bastion runs out with the book, leaves a note that says, I'll return your book. And, of course, Coriander smiles.
Smirking, yeah.
Because this is a trap.
This is what
and
I
he's written out of this movie. By the way, Kelly, speaking of books that are safe, what do you feel about Sorcerer's Stone? Or Prisoner of Azkaban? Are those safe books? Can you just read them and just toss them away when you're done?
I don't toss books. I treat books with respect, unlike Bastion. I don't fucking throw them across a room. First of all, that scene... My kid has gotten in trouble for throwing books before. Let's just put it that way.
So he goes up into
the smash cut!
So he goes up into the attic and he starts reading.
He gets to school and he looks at his classroom and he goes, fuck, math test! And then he goes and hides in the attic of the school.
We've all been there!
He goes and hides in the attic.
Haven't you wanted to skip school because there was a math test to read?
Absolutely.
Right.
And I like math, and I still wanted to skip to read.
French 4 test? Shit. I'm going to the attic and sleeping.
I passed French 4. French 5 did not go as well. And then the only reason I got a good grade in that class was because there was only 5 of us, and it was AP, so they skewed it real hard. Do you know what I remember from French? Bonjour.
Well, I'll enjoy your trip to France next year.
Well, Caitlin lives in Norway now, so I'm still fucked no matter where I go.
And so the kid, after, I guess, making moves on the janitor, has the key to the attic, which he then takes and locks himself in.
But I appreciated that, because at least he took the key out of the door.
Yep.
Because in so many movies, people unlock a door and go in and close it and leave a key on the outside. At least he took it out.
Yeah. And we're going to enter the next part of the movie, which is where he's reading and that kind of stuff and gets sucked in. And I will say, as a framing narrative, this is where it gets interesting.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the first scene, you get a feel for what's going on because you're introduced to three characters. They don't say their names. They don't say their names. But apparently, in the book, because this is made from a book,
right?
Their names are Rockbiter, Nighthawk, and Teeny Weenie.
Teeny Weenie is the Oompa Loompa from the Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Deep Roy. He's great. And from a bunch of other Tim Burton stuff, including Big Fish. Yeah. I will say, the opposite question. You asked when we first saw this. When was the last time you saw this?
Yesterday.
Other than that. Dipshit.
Yeah.
20 years ago?
No.
More than that?
30.
Yeah. You? Probably
8. Jonathan and I were dating, and we watched it with my... If I was not dating Jonathan, then it was longer than that. I was dating somebody, and we watched it in Lexington with my brother.
Well, I mean, I only ask because I forgot how long the pre-stuff goes on. Yeah. Like, I remember the fantasy world a lot, you know, the never-ending story part. But, like, the first 25 minutes of it, he's not in the fantasy book yet.
True.
And holy shit. Like, and again... It doesn't surprise me that there was a framing narrative, but it just goes on and on and on. I'm like, this kid is being abused by everyone. It's like emotional abuse from the dad, physical abuse from the bullies.
Well, I think they want to set up, I mean, you know, they go into this They go into this later about hopes and dreams.
Right.
And I think they wanted to show that this kid was struggling with hopes and dreams.
But that's where
because
I misremembered.
Because he had them and everyone was saying don't.
Yeah. But this is where I misremembered it. Because I thought it was like a Karate Kid or something where then he himself builds up confidence to fight the bullies as opposed to a fucking dinosaur nonsense dog
it's
thing.
A luck dragon.
Fine.
His name is Falcor, and if you look, you can see him in the skies.
He's
in the clouds.
I agree with that. But then it has nothing to do with the kid.
He does.
He's there.
I am still six. And Falcor is in the clouds, and I can see him.
And I will say, as far as puppetry goes, Falcor is a masterpiece. It looks great.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
But I thought the kid stood up for himself. Instead, he just runs a truck over these kids.
Like, absolutely. It's fantastic.
No.
As a bullied kid, I wanted Falcor. I stood up for myself and still got punished.
I just want the kid to stand up for himself once. He doesn't.
But
I want
he
him
probably
to
has.
Yeah, but think about it. If you were given unlimited wishes, would you like to stand up for yourself? Or would you like hire Muscle to go do it for you?
Yes.
But also, I was bullied. I did stand up for myself. I'm the one that got in trouble. And for this kid, for Bastion, I get it. Like, he's done, doesn't want to deal with this. No one's helping him, right? There's literally no one on his side. Mm-hmm. If I had a giant dragon, when no one was on my side, absolutely I would have run these kids down, and I would have taken the dumpster and thrown it in the ocean.
I've never read the book. I just wonder what the purpose of the book is. Because, like, that means he has no character development in the end. I just wonder.
Well, the book, actually, you know, Kelly and I were
chatting
about this.
I'm really trying to remember the book. Okay.
So basically, the movie goes to the halfway point in the book.
Right.
Okay. And then the book keeps going. Bastion goes throughout Fantasia,
literally
aka
rebuilds it.
Fantastica, and starts rebuilding it with all of his wishes.
Right.
Okay. But the problem is, he is carried away. And all of his friends are saying, hey, slow your roll, stop doing the wishes, because every wish was also having an unintended side effect of taking his memories.
Right.
And he goes nuts, he starts fighting his friends, he decides to become Emperor of Fantasia, Fantastica, after the childlike empress disappears.
Interesting.
Yeah, and, I mean, total megalomaniac.
Well, I mean...
And it's a trippy fucking book.
I will say, it would be interesting at the end of the movie if he had to choose between living in the real world and living in Fantastica.
Yeah, and that was... Okay, so funny you bring that up. Apparently, so the author was on board with the movie, loved the movie while it was being done. Until
the ending.
The ending. Yeah. And when he found out about that ending, he lost his ever loving mom.
Interesting.
That he didn't have to choose?
No, that the way it was ended. The way Wolfgang Petersen decided to end the movie. Okay. Wolfgang Petersen wrote the movie as well.
Interesting.
Right.
Well, it just seems like the conflict disappeared.
He tried to sue to get it to stop from going out.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Because that's like and again, the movies turned out fine. She turned out to be a monster, but that's very J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
Right? Like...
No, it's funny. I was watching the Extras documentary, mm-hmm. Making Up, and they're interviewing all these German people, because this, mind you, was very much a German film.
Yes.
You can see that.
Okay. Yeah. They got to the point about how Ende did not like the ending, and, you know, they're like, oh, yeah. He did not like it. He tried to sue us. It was ugly. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It smells of it.
In fact, he called it a giant melodrama made of kitsch, commerce, plush, and plastic.
What? He's not wrong.
Right, he's not wrong. Well, I mean, when you have the theme song that's being, you know, sung by the lead singer of Kaja Goo Goo. I mean, you know. And it was released with, like, dance remixes. the single that came out with, like, dance remixes.
No!
Yes!
Can you send that to me? Does it exist somewhere?
I'm sure it can.
Oh my god.
The only reason I knew about that was because I was in, like, you know, gay clubs in the 90s, and, like, you know, this song came on, and everyone lost their mind.
My daughter recognized.
Because that's what we do in the 90s. You know, game in, listen to the dance remix of the Never-Ending Story.
My daughter recognized it from Homestar Runner, so that's where we are in this way.
Wow.
Yeah, Homestar makes a Never-Ending Soda joke, and it's the same song, so that's where we are in our lives.
Well, in pop culture, I mean, was it Stranger Things last season?
100%.
I'm not up to date.
They better come out with another season any minute now, because kids are like 75.
You don't see
now.
This, but I'm giving Kelly my strongest disappointed face.
But here's what you guys don't understand either, is that not only am I not up to date, I've only seen one of the episodes with Cary Elwes. That's how far behind I am. Like, I just met him.
First of all, it's a great show.
It is a great show.
And I'm mad at me. I'm mad at me and my husband for, like, not sticking with it. And now I feel like we're so far behind that it's...
No.
It would be a good binge, but like,
you
I
need
can't.
To do it soon, because the next season is supposed to come out this summer.
To come out.
And it's the last one, because the kids, I mean, whatever thing.
Kids are aging out.
Well, and the wolf something, Wolfen, mm-hmm. Just was in Ghostbusters. Like, these kids are not only growing up, but they're doing other things now.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway. No, I want to, and I love Cary Elwes.
Well, and,
Cary, if you're listening, you're my favorite.
I know you are.
Sorry, anyway.
Hello there, Kelly.
Where were we?
We can watch Saw later with his starring role in that.
The classic role.
You know?
And don't forget Samwise Gamgee in season 3.
That is one I don't need to rewatch. We've seen it enough.
Danny Glover is just...
Okay, so back to Bastion.
back to Bastion.
Us being introduced to these three individuals.
Yes.
The Rock Fighter, of course, is a huge practical effect.
Yes.
Mountain of a rock so monster that cool. eats rocks.
Before we started recording, I will say, we talked about all the practical effects, all the composite shots, the puppets look remarkable.
They look amazing.
Deep Roy in his top hat riding a snail. Phenomenal.
A racing snail.
It looks so good. They spend a lot of time in this first scene just talking to nonsense, which is fine. Like,
but it also sets up that the nothing is...
Everywhere.
They're all from different
corners,
northwest and south, and the nothing is destroying their lands.
And so
they're on a pilgrimage to see the childlike princess in the ivory tower, which, by the way, ivory tower...
There's a lot there. Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack there.
And
thank you, Germans.
Octoon. So the way it's set up is he's reading the book in this attic, and the warning is you're going to get sucked in and eventually affect it. That doesn't matter for the first 40 minutes of this section.
Yeah.
Right.
Other than occasionally he has to take an old breather, mm-hmm. and the characters seem to hear him freaking out.
Yeah, so it starts really subtly. Like, for instance, when Atreyu gets hungry for lunch, Bastion gets hungry for mm-hmm. lunch, mm-hmm. and then, you know, Bastion says, let's save this for later, and then Atreyu gets on the road again. So it's subtle at first, and they start building and building and building.
Yes, and it's one of those things where it's still this, like, there's no way that that's actually happening. And I think, like, the first... inkling that you're really supposed to have of this is when we meet Atreyu, right? Yeah. We get to the ivory tower, and the nothing is affecting the childlike empress. She is deathly ill, and they brought in this warrior from the plains, right? Mm-hmm. That hunts the purple buffalo, which I would have loved to see. We don't get to see a purple buffalo. But
well,
so he...
Hold up, but Bastion pulls open his book, or rather,
He has a patch on his bag of a Native American hunting a buffalo.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
So you see that. And then, you know, they argue that this kid, Atreyu, can't possibly be the warrior. They said for he's the only Atreyu, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so you take this medallion that they called the Auron.
Yep.
And it's a double...
it's a double Ouroboros.
And that's the cover of the book. And I think those two things... You really see Bastion kind of, like, do a double take. Well, but, like, in my mind, I'm going, duh. Of course, the book is going to have a cover that has to do with the story. Whatever.
Okay. So,
but yeah,
I mean, the Lord
patch,
of the Rings has the one ring on the cover.
Right. But
first
the
stupid
patch
thing.
Is the first thing that kind of draws you in.
First stupid thing. Old book man pervert is reading the book that says it'll suck you in. He needed to appear here.
Is he reading the book?
Yes.
But is he reading the book?
So.
And
so
and it has, it's noted that it has happened before.
Well, my thought was he should have been the old bearded man.
Well, the book itself, the novel, there's a whole storyline involving him mm-hmm. and his involvement in this whole thing.
But that's right. What I'm saying. He should have shown up. It would have been interesting if he was the old bearded yeah. man. I thought it was going to be him until that, like, I don't know, Terry Crews-esque guy, like that ripped black guy with the huge Fu Manchu mustache showed up.
Yeah.
But, like, that was my thought. But I'm like, who...
See, my thought with it was always that, like, he wasn't really reading it. Right? Like...
He was just tempting the kid to come in?
Yes. He knew it needed a narrator. Knew it needed to be a kid.
Creepy old man was luring children into his dark...
That's the page master, again.
Because he's the last one that read it. Because he's the last one that rebuilt the world. Because they
along the curve.
Exactly. Because they acknowledge later...
This would be an awesome horror story.
They acknowledge later that this has happened before. Like, they say that. Like, this has happened.
So, like, The Ring, where you, like, watch
the video. This is 100% The Ring.
7 days later, you
die. Read this book.
That's what my brain always did as a kid, is that not... I hadn't seen this in 25 years.
Okay. I'm being honest.
And yeah. I've watched it not regularly, but more than just once in my childhood, once a few years, 10 years ago or whatever. But like, yeah, that's kind of where my brain always went. Was like, it's noted briefly that it has happened before, so I just figured the bookstore guy was the last, either the last one that went through it or knew.
Well.
Someone that did it, and like...
According to the novel, he was.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, my brain was.
But I also like this idea, and they don't play it up, and probably for the benefit, it's a nice tight 90-minute movie, that he's the only, like, owner of this book, right? Like, it's like a possession, like... And that's why I almost wanted the kid to come out the back end and fight the bullies on his own, because it's like... Then it becomes more personal. It's him, like... As opposed to any other book.
It's showing personal growth.
Which this movie ignores.
Yeah.
If only for story efficiency, which I'm fine with. You know, it just... I guess I just grew up with American kid power movie. Like, at the end, the Mighty Ducks have to fucking win.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So, you know, he does go out... at the same time that he embarks on his quest, in which they do, what... at least 5-10 minutes of all these scenes of him riding a horse across various lands.
I mean, the horse doesn't matter, or emotionally is tragic.
But that is also when Gamork goes off and...
Starts hunting Atreyu.
His quest to hunt Atreyu. Which is basically like a big wolf with green eyes.
Right.
Well, he's half of a wolf puppet until it needs to be the whole wolf puppet.
Yes. Again, practical effects... Very nice.
Never
very
complain
awesome.
Because light is hitting something and the shadows work and it's fucking intimidating.
They made the best with what they had.
And apparently there was more of a scene with the actual large wolf fight, but it got cut from the movie because the actor that plays Atreyu, apparently the claws on that wolf were actually sharp and it gouged him right under his eye, almost took his eye out.
No
so when
shit.
You see at the end of the movie, he's on his left side, when he's got that scratch under his eye, that's from the prop. Like they had to pause, go to ER stitches, like it happened and it's after that scene, his face is constantly away from the camera until he gets back to the childlike princess or empress or whatever, which I guess is
then
it had healed enough that it so that was an actual like injury.
Interesting.
In fact, so they didn't include a lot of it in there because he actually got hurt.
No, the first real scene after he takes off on the quest is the Swamp of Sadness.
Yes! So they start with, they're taking this beautiful
coming in
nap.
Hot.
Yeah.
Coming in hot.
Coming in hot.
Beautiful nap by a river and Artax is nudging Atreyu and he's like, oh, it's time to get moving again. Okay, and they get up and there's this beautiful river and now they're in the Swamp of Sadness.
Whoa. You're acting harsh on this. This is Princess Bride, right? We wake up in the pit of despair. Like, this is what this is.
That was slightly comedic.
Yeah, this
is sad.
This is soul-crushing.
There is no joy in Mudville, because
Mighty Casey has struck out. This kid, the horse is like going down, and like at the bottom is Elmer's.
Like, the
lore is that if you succumb to sadness in the Swamp of Sadness, you will sink forever into it.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. Ed had been canceled, so the horse had nothing to live for. He's going down like a.
But it's heartbreaking that the horse is so sad that he can't go on anymore.
Crying.
But he's trying, and he goes, "Oh, I know, buddy. It's so tough. You can't take it. It's okay." He's like trying to encourage him, and then the horse keeps sinking, and it's like.
And the eyes on that horse.
The horse is like, "What's going on? I didn't sign up for this shit."
The horse looks like he's in pain.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure they're in some sort of actual, like, muddy pool that keeps filling up until they, like, have to, they literally cut that scene to black so that you don't see a horse die. And there is a rumor that that horse did die.
There's no PETA circuit.
The horse didn't die. The guy that played Atreyu came to Dragon Con in 2010. He said the horse didn't die. They sold it to one of the stagehands because they couldn't afford to fly it back to the States. So the horse is fine.
So you were at Dragon Con when you were like 13?
So it was 2010. It was my very first Dragon Con. I was not in that panel, but it was my very first Dragon Con, yes.
Well,
the sweet summer child. I was there in 2002.
But I'm not from Georgia, though.
Yeah. So anyway, let's move on and not talk about my trip to Dragon Con in the 90s.
I want to know how Atreyu had the ability to not succumb to the Swamp of Sadness. I mean,
well,
he kept
going. That's the thing. He didn't. He was sad, but he didn't succumb to the sadness. He kept going until after he met with Morla. The reason he's in there because Morla lives on that big, supposedly lives on the big giant shell mountain.
Shell mountain.
But
shell
turns out
mountain. It's a hill. It was a hill at best.
Yes. Apparently, Morla's a big freaking tortoise.
Hello there, I'm Atreyu for Xanax, and I'd like to tell you how to escape the Pit of Sadness.
But he Morla tells him, basically, that, he's allergic to you, but he's like, I know how to, like, save the child. Like, Princess, an Earth child has to give her a name.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's no Earth children in Fantasia, and you have to go beyond the borders to get one.
At this point, the kid shits himself because the turtle comes out of the ground.
Yeah. But it's after that scene where Bastion now has lost all hope.
Because she tells him to give up.
Morla says give up.
Yeah.
And because of that moment, that's when he starts sinking.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
That's when Falcor just swoops out of the sky.
And saves him right before Gamork attacks him.
Yes, that's
like,
true.
Like, goes right over his head.
I will say three things. First of all, I appreciate you remembering the character names because they're all over the map and they come flying
they're
at
weird.
You really quick.
I love them.
Charlie's
got it written down.
What? It's all in my memory head.
Well, and secondly, I don't know how long we are in the actual movie, but this whole thing flies.
Yeah.
And the kid playing Atreyu, when the horse dies, you buy it.
Yeah,
he,
it's
he's selling
that.
It.
He did it great.
And he comes out of the mud soaked. Like, he's covered.
Yeah.
And then when Falcor comes out and saves it, we don't even know Falcor's name yet. Mm-hmm. But, like, we enter this weird fantasy sequence. Like, Bolcutt is yelling at us. And, dude, the movie just flies here.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Morla didn't tell him that it was the Earth Child that has to name her. Morla told him that the Southern Oracle, which was 10,000 miles away, knew it. And that's why he was sad, because there was no way he could make it there and back
and
to save a child like that.
Because the nothing is coming.
Yeah.
And, like, and you know, Morla is basically saying, not that it matters. Not that it matters. Not that it matters. And
he doesn't care that he doesn't care.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't care that we don't care.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's
and they
apathy.
Literally say, it's 10,000 miles. He's like, there's no way I can do that. And they go, not that it matters, but you should just give up now. And it's like, fuck, I think I would succumb to sadness too, dude. Yeah. Like, my horse just died and you told me that my mission is fucked?
I mean, the story as it unfolds is very much a balance between hopelessness, despair, and creativity and dreams.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and we should also mention that at this point, the racing snail, Deep Roy, the furry pedophile guy, and like the Stone Muncher are like
Rockbinder.
Whatever, you know.
They're all being eaten by the nothing?
Well, they're running away from the nothing. They're flying away. Yeah. There's the weird, furry, human version of Animal the Muppet on the bat guy, and the nothing is picking them off one by one.
Yep.
And, like, that's what we're cutting to, as literally the world is being consumed by the nothing. Which is this kind of weird, murky fart cloud thing that is bubbly and terrifying, and frankly... Recently, the Fantastic Four movies have tried to use something similar.
Yep.
This is the most effective. Yeah. This is practical effects. It looks practical terrifying.
Yep.
And the
it is something everyone like kind of understands. It's like a bad storm. It's something that everyone knows that fear, right? You can see it. It's something that you visually recognize.
Well, and like it reminds me of the Stargate sucking effect, but it's just, since it's practical and since it's got a great composite shot angle from Wolfgang Peterson, it's very visceral, and like the fear of this Deep Roy in his little top hat, it feels more intense for this little mop top kid Bastion. So we buy it, and then when they're just gone and we have the sad Rockman, it feels more terrifying.
Absolutely. Oh, but we missed it. Oh, when Morla comes out of the Swamp of Sadness, Bastion screams.
And everyone Morla looks around.
And Atreyu look Morla around and hear it.
Hero.
And he goes, no, that can't be. And that's like another hint that
he's another clue that he's
there.
Tied to the
He is
story.
Present there with them.
Yeah. So anyway, Falcor takes him almost all the way to the Southern Oracle.
Like those fucking eagles. He wakes up. Yep. Apparently, he's been asleep for a couple of days. And he, you know, Atreyu wakes up and he goes, you took me all 10,000 miles? And Falcor goes, well, no, it's only 9,891 the way the dragon flies or something. And I just thought that was cute. And the fact that I know that number means that I have seen this movie more than I should.
Oh. But that's well, and then, of course, we meet the people who, like, patched him up.
Yes.
And that's apparently two gnomes named Engiwook and Urgle.
Do they use their names?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is where it feels the most like Princess Bride, right? It's Billy Crystal.
This is totally Billy Crystal and
it
Crazy
does.
Oldie.
Yeah. It does.
They're not gonna make it, are they? No, they're not.
Well, and he gets mad that he doesn't get to see the night blow up, right? Because the night goes through the Sphinxes.
He's
right?
Only
a gate.
Mostly dead.
But my favorite. This is where my favorite line comes in. To the witch, wench.
That's right.
It's adorable. Admit it. It's adorable.
It's a good line, and it
to
is.
To the witch,
wench. It is a lot like the, I'm not a witch, I'm your wife.
And she should be muttering more to her husband in this little bucket, like, ah, son of a bitch. Like, it's very funny. But
it's a good scene.
And but he's a scientific gnome that has been studying the Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
She's like some herbalistic witch who can heal. Yes.
But witchy witch. But as a composite shot goes, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like
it's
all practical. Them with their big ears and.
Yep.
But you're going up over just space.
Yep.
It just stars and it's gorgeous. And I'm sure Neil deGrasse Tyson fucked all over the scene. But
it doesn't matter. It's
he's
not
been
a real
canceled.
It's
not
nonsense. A real world.
It's not a real world. It
and
can do whatever it wants. But also,
gorgeous.
Like, and Falcor is beautiful. Like when you
Falcor.
Look at Falcor,
yeah. Those practical effects, that puppet.
Yeah, because he's a luck dragon. He also looks a lot like my dog. And you see the fur, but you also see these really beautiful white, almost like opalescent scales underneath.
Right.
And it's so well done.
Well, and it's not just puppetry. It's also like claymation almost. It's like, because like, and again, the rock... Tonger or whatever his name is.
Rockbiter.
Okay, whatever. It just the way his lips move, it's just it's incredible. It's like these practical effects. I'd watch this any day over like, and I like the Pirates movies, but the latter Pirates movies, they're all CGI nonsense.
Absolutely.
And I would just something that Falcor puppet needs to be in the Smithsonian, even if we have to invade Germany again for no reason. It's just it's incredible.
I mean, he's beautiful. But
the
yeah, so
moves as he flies.
Everything moves. It's so pretty.
Yeah, no, They did a really good job with it.
I mean, eventually we'll get to the princess, but like that set looks great. Like it, yeah. I mean, it looks like now after Peter Jackson has done Lord of the Rings, it looks cheap. But it's like it's Helm's Deep before Helm's Deep.
Yeah. Well, and the Sphinxes remind me of, or well, Lord of the Rings reminds me of the Sphinxes.
Can I tell you this just because we're here?
Yes.
After okay, so just catching up. After everyone recovers, they have to go through like several gates.
Two gates. The first gate are the two sphinxes.
Yeah.
And you have to have you have to be self-assured. You have to believe in yourself.
To believe in your quest. Right?
Your own wealth. Your own worth.
Yes,
you have to believe in your own worth to make it through. And if the sphinxes open their eyes, you're done for. Right.
And we have
And
we have a knight in shining armor literally get vaporized. And I was watching this last night with my daughter, and she goes, "The sphinxes have big boobies." And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
There were nipples for no reason, too.
Yeah.
It's a nice touch by Wolfgang.
Just fun, because it's not edited out like it is in every other movie.
No.
But to the point.
That was like such anxiety. Like,
it was.
They're going to open their eyes. Are they going to open their eyes? No, they're not going to open their eyes. Oh my God, they're going to open their eyes.
But you
especially since
too.
Not Billy Crystal's losing his mind. He's like, oh God!
Yeah, exactly.
Are you like, think about that. Like when you're watching this moment and you have to be 100% assured of your worth to get through this test.
Yeah.
Can y'all say that? Because, like, well, I'd be dead.
Well, and frankly...
As a child, no, I would not. These days, I'm happy with myself. I'm happy with who I am. I believe I have a lot of self-worth.
I don't know, man. Sometimes, I like, and this has nothing to do with this movie, but, like, the new movie Encanto?
Yeah, that little Disney movie.
Yeah. I feel a deep connection with Louisa. Like, lots of fucking pressure, like, lots of fucking shit going on. Like, I don't know, you guys. I think those eyes might open a little bit. Like, I don't know that I would make it through.
I hear that movie, they came at basically every psychosis that adults have.
It's about an abusive mother relationship.
Yeah.
It's Catholic guilt is what it is.
Generational trauma.
It is.
I can't make it through a cry.
Okay. So anyway,
I watch it every fucking day because I have a 5-year-old and I'm just like,
He dives through it the last minute.
He dove through it the last minute. He made it.
And the thing I was thinking of, as someone who hasn't seen it in 20 years, is a Indiana Jones kind of movie.
Yeah.
Where, because again, Indy either gets it or he doesn't.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But then cheats to get it.
But that's what's interesting here, because that's what it is.
He's like, a peasant man would kneel!
Whoa! Like, because that's what this is, where he gets it at the last minute.
Exactly.
Even the guy's like, run, you! Like, it's funny. It's good.
And you get, again, you get Bastion going, run, and that's when Atreyu runs.
Meanwhile, Falkor could just fly over this nonsense.
I know. It's just like, whatever.
But it's Lord of the Rings with the eagles. You know, sometimes you just have to have it.
You gotta have your quest.
You gotta show that worth on your own. You know? It's your self-worth, not what, you know, other
and
people
And then
think.
The second gate, which is the magic mirror gate, which, of course, it's supposed to show you what your true self is.
And then he sees Bastion.
Yeah, and basically, Bastion sees Atreyu, and Atreyu sees Bastion. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, you realize, oh, wait. They are connected.
Yeah.
It should have just been a, like, Legend of Zelda Shadow Link situation. He's fighting himself, and then Bastion turns into the other self. That's what I thought. I thought they were going to...
That would be good. Yeah.
I thought they were going to physically fight each other.
But then he makes it through that, and now he's back at the first gate. I mean, no, the Sphinxes. He's at the Sphinxes, and it's like the same set pieces.
Yeah. But now it's the Southern Oracle, and the color is different.
Yeah, it's like instead of being tinged like orange-yellow, now it's tinged blue.
Yeah.
And them titties are cold. And then we end up meeting the prince, eventually the empress. Like that.
Well, the Southern Oracle tells him
he needs
that
an earthling child.
An earthling child to has name to name them. The princess.
Right, okay.
The empress.
And then we cut to Bastion and goes, my mom has a good name. We're just like, we get it!
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and he walks to the window and goes, it's too bad. And, like, leans out like they're going to come get him. He's like, it's too bad they don't come ask me, right? Because now, you know, now Atreyu is on Falkor's back and they're trying to leave Fantasia to find, to go to Earth to find an Earthling child. And
so they try to go, they're looking for the boundaries.
They're looking for the boundaries.
Because apparently the Earthling child is beyond the boundaries of Fantasia. And so they go in search. And
Bastion
basically
is wistfully looking out the window like, I wish they'd asked me, my mother had a beautiful name. And he's like, cool. Can't wait to hear what this is, because obviously we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Right? But
so
then
they go into
the
upside down.
Oh, yeah. Well, then the nothing attacks.
The nothing attacks. And Atreyu,
Alcor and Atreyu get separated.
They get separated. And Atreyu runs into the Rockbiter. And again, in a scene that just fucking guts you.
Rips at you.
You've got the Rockbiter sitting there looking, this huge mountainous being, literally made of boulders, looking at his hands going, I'm not gonna make it through this. These look like such big, strong hands,
it's a great
right?
Line.
But it comes down to he couldn't save his friends from the nothing. He couldn't hold them, right?
Yeah.
Like he's supposed to be this big.
The nothing
can't do this.
Hold his friends.
Right out of his hands, right?
And like Barfly, he's like, oh, my friends are good.
I'm a failure. And Atreyu's like, you're not the failure. I am. I failed the realm. I didn't do this. I didn't make this happen. And it's like, neither one of you guys are at fault.
And of course, back to the theme of hopelessness and despair.
Exactly. And for nothing.
That's why
control.
I wanted him to beat up the bullies. Anything for some hope.
Right. Well, then of course he, you know, Atreyu is amongst the ruins, and everything is
his story.
It's pictures of his story.
That's right.
Until he runs into Gamork.
Gamork
doesn't know who he is, and
which is so
weird.
Fucking stupid.
I know, because Gamork's supposed to be chasing him, and Gamork tried to eat him earlier.
He saw his. They were literally face to face.
Like literally,
you
like
you have to
yes.
know his smell too. Like you're a wolf. How were you tracking him to begin with?
And so. But what's really interesting is Gamork describes who he is. He's like behind. He works for the power behind
the nothing.
Yeah, and it's just like you start to realize, oh, they're trying to set this up as like, you know, this metaphor, like his father was like, you know, like an agent behind the nothing,
yes.
trying to get rid of, you know, the dreams of his
right.
child. My favorite line is like, you know, people who have no hopes are easy to control, and whoever has control has the power.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why the nothing was doing what it was doing.
Reaganomics.
Yeah, exactly.
It is one of those things. It's like, you know, you take away all that imagination, all that freedom, all that hope, and
it's and the emptiness is all that's left.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Atreyu listens to him, you know, evil at him. And basically says, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm Atreyu. And
yeah, he's like, well, if you're going to fight, then fight. I'm not giving up without a fight.
Yep.
I'm Atreyu.
Mm-hmm.
I am the warrior Atreyu. And so then the animatronic wolf, right, attacks. And we get to see the whole wolf for a very brief moment once it has fallen over because it actually maimed the actor.
This is also Bruce from Jaws. Like, it doesn't look very good,
yeah.
so you gotta cut it out and just like, oh no!
It all happened so quickly.
Yeah.
And Gamork is voiced by the same voice actor that does Falkor.
Frank Falkor.
But basically Gamork ends up dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
with a rock shard that's shaped like a dagger.
Yep.
Perfect aim, first time. Apparently this was a much longer fight scene, but because of the injury, they literally cut all of it except for that part.
It's fine for it. I mean, honestly, like,
it keeps
the movie tight. And
it works.
You don't need it.
So while this is all going on, they keep cutting to Falkor, who's looking for the Auron, and finally finds the Auron.
In the water.
And then goes back and gets Atreyu.
Yes.
And
as the nothing is literally ripping
him. Yeah, ripping everything apart. And then the next scene, they're like in outer space, and Fantasia's destroyed.
Yeah, it's just gone.
We end up with the Empress. I will also just say, since we're here, it looks like a mix between Twister and Wizard of Oz, the tearing apart. Looks great.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have no complaint. It's all practical effects.
No, it's
effects.
Definitely
great
coming
scenes.
Apart.
I mean, still doing great.
Yeah.
Space balls where they're sucking the trees out of the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds silly, but that makes all the difference.
No, it's legitimately coming apart.
They showed like all these miniatures that they were like, you know, filming and everything.
You said this movie could have probably lost a lot of money in theaters. I believe it because the practical effects are incredible.
Yeah, there's no
question. We end up finally meeting the Empress, who's this, like,
after Atreyu asks the Auron to take them back. Apparently this thing has powers that we've never seen before. Cool.
And, of course, you know, there's one, like, sliver of a rock, and the ivory tower's on it, and the childlike Empress is the only one there, you know, perched on her bed, waiting for Atreyu.
Of course.
This one grain of sand is my whole empire.
Well, yeah. She has to explain to Atreyu why he went on the journey, and that's when it all starts to come clear, because
he's here. He's with us now.
Exactly. You know, Trey's like, why doesn't the Earthling come? Well, he's here. He doesn't understand.
He doesn't understand.
And Bastion's trying to piece together that maybe they're talking about me.
And he is slow.
He is slow
on the uptake.
Yes.
The whole world fucking dies. Everyone except the childlike Empress dies before he yells out her name, which cannot possibly be his mother's name.
This is where
Moonchild, which is, you know, part of my Peloton handle, so I'm for it, but like,
yeah, exactly. Well, you know, this was also the
you're
80s,
not the daughter,
you know,
of Frank
maybe,
Zappa.
Maybe, yeah, maybe like she had heavy moms.
But this is where I thought the bookstore owner would come back somewhere, and he would be like,
so how's the book?
Don't you realize I told you you'd get sucked in the book, dipshit? Like,
and he's at this school all night. Like, this is overnight.
He should be the janitor.
Huge fucking storm that coincides with the nothing tearing everything apart, right?
Just like, something.
So
like,
then the childlike Empress is there with the one grain of sand.
Mm-hmm.
And,
this
you
is all
know,
that's left.
Bastion's with her in the magical realm of that's nothing right now. Mm-hmm. And she explains that to bring back Fantasia, all he has to do is wish. Start wishing.
And he's so confused, because he's like, what do you mean, wish? I'm not supposed... It's, you know, he's kind of saying, I'm not supposed to live in fantasy.
I don't know what to wish for. I'm not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Like,
then a girl dressed like a Playboy playmate comes in. Thank you, God! No.
Right, well, he wishes for Falcor.
Well, no. First, he wishes to be able to fly around Fantasia on Falcor.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then he sees that everyone was restored. You know, Atreus riding Artax. Yay! And, you know, the Rockbiter, you know.
They're all back together.
Yeah, the Night Hag, everyone. You know, they're all back together. And then his second wish is to take Falcor into the real world and to do the thing that drives Nick crazy.
It's just,
I mean,
a bunch of people in suits are like, what's that?
Right? Everyone's terrified.
Yeah.
Everyone's terrified. Like, if you're going to make a wish like that, like, put it in their heads or something. Like, don't let the whole fucking city see.
Well, that's why I wanted the kid to just stand up to them, because otherwise Falcor's just death by cops. And
but what's he going to wish for? Courage? I mean, like,
if I only had a brain.
Exactly. Like, what? I mean, how? I don't know.
I mean, like, and I mean, I know this is not how the book goes, but I almost wish that him and Atreyu, like, had a sword at the end and they fought together. Because then he could stand in the real world.
Take a sword and kill the bullies in the alley?
No, but just stand up to them. If he was the one who, like, fought off the bullies and then shoved that one kid who looks like he's about to do the truffle shuffle into the dumpster. Because then he'd stand up for himself. Because in the real world, a dog dragon's not going to save you.
Well, you're not wishing hard enough, Nicholas.
Obviously, Nick, I already told you that Falcor is in the clouds. You just have to look for him.
Well, at least in Rookie of the Year, he got the World Series ring and then pitched for Gary Busey. Like, I mean, like, I don't know. I guess I grew up in the 90s kid power instead of the 80s kid power. We just did blow and, like, saluted Ronald Reagan at the end.
I don't know. I would have welcomed the backup.
So the movie ends eventually.
Ends with him flying off, right, on Falcor. Where do they go? I don't know. Because the narrator says, and now it's over.
He has more adventures, and that's a story,
that's a story
for
another
time.
Not directed by such a good director.
And it was like two sequels that were terrible. Oh, and a cartoon series and a TV show
And then what? Robot Chicken.
Yes.
Hey, all I've seen is the movie and read the book, and I honestly cannot remember anything about the book except that there was like rainbow
everything
sand.
Everything came out of the original, after the original movie. It was garbage.
Well,
sure. I believe it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I thought this was good. Charlie, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts. Wow. This was really a nostalgic throwback for me. I mean, I love this movie. I thought it was great. The idea of being caught up in your dreams, your hopes, being able to escape in the books. You know, I loved to read when I was a kid.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's a great story. It's a little bit cheesy. It's an extra, you know, 80s-ish approach to things. But the practical effects are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Green screen could take a little, you know, leave it, you know, it wasn't that great. But all the practical effects were amazing. Story was solid. I think it's a winning story. I think, you know, kids should watch it.
Absolutely.
Go.
No, I'm right there with you. I love this movie. I forgot how quickly it went. Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels like, and I guess it's from all the emotions that I guess kind of go into the storyline, but it felt like I remembered it being a longer adventure. Mm-hmm. And for a movie, it is relatively short and snappy.
Tight.
And, you know, I, again, will stand up for Bastion in the sense of, like, I understand being the kid that's bullied and wanting the luck dragon back up. Like, I will stand up for him there. Being the kid that yells out while you're reading a book, that's obnoxious. Maybe don't do that. But no, I'm the same way. I loved reading when I was a kid. So having Bastion become part of that, literally become part of the book and be able mm-hmm. to,
yep.
you know, write himself into it, is something that I always wanted and like always kind of I wish I was a better writer so that I could create these worlds and put myself in them. Unfortunately, that is not a talent that I got. It did break my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love it. I Adelaide was not interested in it. It broke me for her to ask to watch something else on her little tablet screen, not even give it a chance, but one day I will get her to watch it with me one day.
Not to say that I'm a better parent or anything. My daughter loved it.
Well, Adelaide loved Labyrinth, but did not want to watch this with me. And that is a fucking piece of bullshit that Jonathan fucking won that battle.
I mean, all in all to say, everything Charlie said especially, the practical effects are gorgeous.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for when light hits things. There's yeah. no CGI. It's so smooth. And, like, also, this is out of place maybe, but it reminded me of, like, a Don Bluth movie, like Land Before Time. Like, it has such a weird fantasy yeah. world it creates. It's so wide. And, like, a lot of these, like, well, it has to be real world, but it ties it in such a nice, tight way. And I was making fun because that's what makes this interesting. We're not, you know, this isn't Siskel and Ebert. We're not just reviewing. We're having fun. But, like, this movie, the flawlessness where it switches is what makes it. Because if you don't believe the transition, who gives a shit? Like, it's the same thing with the first Matrix. If you don't believe he's in one world and then another, why would you ever watch it? Well, this you believe. There's this fantasy world, and we've all read books that suck us in, even exactly. comics or graphic novels. That's why those later Marvel movies bother me. They stop caring about the people involved. This movie cares about everyone who watches it, and that's why it's subtle, and you want to ride. And my wife hadn't seen this in forever, and she's like, what's the dog dragon? And I'm like, Falcor. And it came out. Just came out of my mouth, yeah. and I'm just like, oh, this movie is part of our culture in a weird way.
Yeah.
In a way that, and I love Lord of the Rings. I just watched all of it on extended in 4K, and it's beautiful. But that's a different world. The fact that this takes place in downtown, let's say Toronto, matters in some way.
It does. And I like, yeah. too, like you said, the transitions are believable, I think, because they are so stark. I mean, yeah. you're either there or you're not. And it's yeah. exactly like you said. It's like reading a book. When you put your book down, you are no longer in that world, and mm-hmm. you feel that, and it makes it believable. It's like you said, it's not this, you know, kind of in and out, here or there, we're not really sure. There's a very clear line from yeah. where you are, and it is like reading a book.
Well, and again, not to get too filmic on us, when you're looking at the rule of thirds, what Marvel always does is put a real person in the middle third, and then everything else is CGI. There's no CGI here.
No.
Like, if you're focusing on the wrong corner while some nonsense is happening in the middle, you're still in a real world. That's what makes this incredible. And that's why people like The Lord of the Rings. That's why people like the non-touched-up Star Wars.
That's why people like Harry Potter. A lot of those effects are real.
That's right.
Like,
yep.
And when you get too CGI-ish, it's a shame. And that's why, like, on one hand, I want them to remake this because it's a world that I think kids would appreciate the fact that they could be in a story. But they would never do this without CGI. So
no.
Leave it as it is. We rarely do movies that are this good, subtle, touching.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just glad something like this exists in a way we can find. I'm glad NeverEnding Story is on Netflix right now. And if you haven't seen it before, I hope it's still on Netflix. And if it's not, since we have people in Bulgaria, 12 other countries watching us right now, fund it. But in the meantime, we're about to run out of time here. So listen, review, rate, look us up. And frankly, check out our back catalog, because even some nonsense we talked about years ago now, whenever there's practical effects, light hitting an object, we're kind of there. And we dished on Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, which we've done. You know what? Jim Henson is a magical man.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P.D. But that's what this is. To see an actual fucking Muppet wink at you, that's what you need. So you know what? If you haven't had a Muppet wink at you today, fucking let a Muppet wink at you. And check out Glove and Boots on YouTube. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Coxey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Sir Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.
Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Ner Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Ner Trinette. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.